Golden State Media Concepts bring you Book Review Podcast, a haven for bookworms of all ages and the widest genres, from mystery to memoirs, romance to comedy, fantasy to sci-fi. If you love to read, this is the podcast for you. It's the Golden State Media Concepts Book Review Podcast.
And welcome to the GSMC Book Review Podcast, brought to you by the GSMC Podcast Network. I'm your host, Sarah, and I am happy to welcome you to yet another episode of the podcast. It is the 4th of July week here. Well, I mean, it's the 4th of July week everywhere. I guess I should say it's the week of Independence Day here in the States. So if you are a listener from the States, happy 4th of July week. If you have the week off, that's awesome. I hope you're having a wonderful and relaxing vacation somewhere, or not somewhere. If you're staying home and hiding from the world, I support that too. If you have tomorrow off, then that's awesome as well. Enjoy your 4th. Please be safe. Wear a lot of sunscreen. And if you don't have tomorrow off, thank you for working, because, you know, takes a lot of people to make the world go around, and we all appreciate that you are working so that we can go be crazy and get sunburned and watch fireworks. I hope you, even if you are working, you still get to spend some of the day with friends or family or whatever. At any rate, happy 4th of July. I mentioned on last episode that I had another interview today, and I am speaking today with author Tommy Carbone, the author of Growing Up Greenpoint, which is a memoir of his life growing up in Brooklyn in the 70s. I'm going to read you the back of the book, which is it's a quote, and then a little snippet, and then another quote. So the first quote is, "The New York City of the 1970s looked very different from the gentrified metropolis we know today. Gotham had an unprecedented fiscal crisis in 1975, and 2 years later, the city descended into chaos after the power went out for 25 hours. The city lived in fear." And that is a quote from C. Sturbens, author of New York City Used to Be a Terrifying Place, from the Business Insider, July 12th, 2013. And then the description of the book is that Tommy Carbone grew up in Greenpoint when the city was a very different place. In this memoir of his childhood, he shares stories of his family and antics with his friends on the streets between Nassau, Manhattan, and Greenpoint Avenues in Brooklyn. And then to finish off the back of the book, there is a quote from the author himself, from Tom Carbone. "I suspect being mugged, getting chased for playing stickball, and grabbing the back of a city bus while wearing roller skates made me a more resilient person. We didn't mind the 77 blackout, sweat over the 78 blizzard, or freak out about the Son of Sam. The Yankees were winning pennants, and the girls were oh so cute. We had some great times." So I love the juxtaposition of the author's quote with the quote from the article above about how the city was a terrifying place. People lived in fear, and I'm sure that they did. I mean, the Son of Sam was definitely something to be scared of. And then, you know, losing power in an entire city for 25 hours, there's a lot to think about in terms of your food spoiling, your AC going out. It was the middle of a heat wave, having to take time off work because none of the public transportation was running, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, there's a lot of things to think about when you're an adult. When you're a kid, it's kind of an adventure. And Tommy was, I think, around 10 when the power went out, when the blackout happened. And then, so that was in 77, and then in 78, there was a blizzard, a giant blizzard, and he talks about that. There's just a lot of really fun stories in this book about his life in this neighborhood, the Greenpoint neighborhood of Brooklyn. It's very different from my own childhood growing up in Montana, in rural Montana, so it was a lot of fun for me to read and see these different experiences. even though it's very different, there were still some things that stood out to me. Some of the stories that he tells about his family, his uncles, his grandparents, that still were familiar to me, even though, you know, it was a different setting. His family had different ethnicities than mine. His family is Polish and Italian. Mine is Norwegian and Scottish and German and a bunch of other stuff thrown in. But there's still a lot of similarities to some of the things that happened, even though, like I said, we had vastly different childhoods. So it's a lot of fun. He has some great insight from a child's perspective about things that would have seemed very, very different from an adult's perspective. There is roller skating, which is always cool. You know, you would roller skate to the roller rink, which, you know, we never roller skated really outside except on the sidewalk. So when I think of, and I don't know, the roads just weren't that great in my hometown. So when I think about roller skating to somewhere, I'm fascinated because there just wasn't that much good pavement where I grew up. Doesn't matter. Roller skating and then actually having a roller rink, very cool. Okay, so that's really probably enough out of me. I'm going to let Tommy Carbone talk about his own book because he wrote it and he lived it and he is going to tell it much better than I can. So let's go ahead and turn to that interview with author Tommy Carbone about his memoir, Growing Up Greenpoint. Hi, Tom. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Sarah. Thank you for having me.
It is wonderful to have you here. We are here to talk about your memoir, Growing Up Greenpoint. But before we get to the book, I would love for my listeners just to get to know you a little bit. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. I guess I'll start with, I am married to a wonderful woman named Meredith. She has been my biggest supporter in this new writing endeavor of mine, and she listens to all my ideas, and she's always my first beta reader, so that's helpful. We have two beautiful teenage daughters, Marissa and Gina, and we live on the coast of Maine, which is wonderful since we love the outdoors and hiking and beaches and our lakes and ponds up here. As far as background, I started out as an engineer and a manager, so I am a high-tech kind of geek person, but I've been fortunate to travel a great deal around the world, which has given me a lot of material for different stories that I've been writing about. And for the past few years, I've been playing this weekend writer person, capturing those stories from my travels and observations on life in general. And that led me to this recent book, Growing Up Greenpoint.
Okay, thank you for that. So tell us a little bit about Growing Up Greenpoint.
Well, it is, as you mentioned in the intro, a memoir of my childhood years growing up in Greenpoint, which is a neighborhood of Brooklyn, which is the most populous borough of New York City. And the narrative for that is my childhood years that takes place roughly between, I'd say, 1975 and 1986, although it has flashbacks and flash forwards, and I play with time a great deal in my life. But it's definitely not a linear day-by-day, year-by-year account of what happened, which I think may have confused my mom a little bit when she first read it, because she was expecting this autobiography of this happened and that happened. And she's like, no, you got these backwards. I'm like, but that's not the way I want to write this.
Right.
Around making an engaging story for the reader. And so it's about putting those things together in a story type of timeline. That was kind of fun. The book actually begins with a flashback when I'm working later in life, and a conversation takes us back to the blackout we had in New York City in 1977, which happened during a summer heat wave, and a flash of lightning took out a power line. And later in life, I ended up working at that power plant. So the connection there was kind of interesting, and that thought of just that story weaved together and how those life events coincided was perfect for beginning the story. And that night is etched in my memory, and I think because of a little bit of the excitement, the fear we had of the looters, and not knowing how long we were going to be out of power, it's a night I always remember, even though I was only 9 at the time. Those events of my pop-up, my dad's dad, sitting at the front window with his pistol, which none of us think really worked anyway, but worrying about what was going to happen because the hysterics on the news broadcast of looting and arsons, were they going to be coming close to our neighborhood? But the next day, it was still hot in New York City. It was probably close to 95 or 100. And we were all outside, and somebody opened up the fire hydrant, and we had a great time playing in the streets, whether it was wiffle ball or playing slap or punch ball. But then again, at night, when the sun went down, we still had no power. So there was a lot of the unknowns of what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the arc of the book. There's all these little stories and events that happened through my childhood, whether when I was in Greenpoint as a kid, or we were on vacation as a family, or playing with different cousins, or being involved with my uncles. It's the adventures we had and what we did throughout that time of my life.
I'm going to interrupt here really quick, but you can see from the time that we've had with the interview so far that even though you may have grown up somewhere very different from Brooklyn, maybe even from the 1970s, there are still a lot of things that you maybe recognize in your own life or in your own family, and there will be more of that. We do have to take our first break of the podcast. When we come back, Tom will be talking more about his experiences. We'll be talking a little bit about his next memoir and some fiction books that he is writing. So stay tuned. You're listening to the GSMC Book Review Podcast, and I'll be right back.
Still on the search of that one true love? On the limbo in this crazy world of dating, marriage, relationships? Well, listen to the Golden State Media Concepts Relationship Podcast, your one-stop podcast for everything about relationships.
Welcome back to the GSMC Book Review Podcast. I am speaking today with author Tommy Carbone about his memoir, Growing Up Greenpoint, A Kid's Life in 1970s Brooklyn. He has lots more stories to share, including a pickle garage. If you've never been to a pickle garage, I think you need to stay tuned. So let's go ahead and get back to that interview. The stories in the book are a lot of fun to read because, I mean, there's the blackout, and then there's you were also a child during a pretty major blizzard at that point. And so seeing it from a child's perspective is a lot of fun because then, I mean, I think we often think of those things from the adult's perspective, especially, you know, your parents, I'm sure, were worried about during the blackout. You talk about, you know, everything in the refrigerator going bad and what are we going to... How are we going to replace the things that have, you know, we can no longer use, and all of those things that parents have to worry about? And you were just having fun, enjoying the experience.
Exactly. And that was a lot of thinking about that. I didn't remember a lot of those details until I started typing. And even my mom, when she read an early draft, she's like, wow, I forgot all about that. And how did you remember that? And I don't know if it was from conversations we had when I was a little bit older, or these memories just come floating back into your brain as you're typing. And all of a sudden you think, geez, this isn't going to be a story. I only have a couple sentences. But then pages and pages later, you're like, wow, I remembered all that. And it was quite interesting to go through that. But we didn't have, you know, video games and Netflix and cable. So it's all the memories I have of playing with my friends or cousins on the streets, because we were outside from sunup to sundown, and that's just what we did.
Right. So what prompted you then to, you know, you talked about writing down stories. What prompted you to write a full memoir?
I think the major thing that started this memoir was a break from a different memoir that I was writing, which is a little bit more complicated in stories from later in my life. And I was kind of putting that aside. And I thought I'd just write some stories for my children to have about our family and what it was like when I was growing up. And then 18 months later and 80-something thousand words later, I had this huge binder of all these stories. And I thought, well, I think there might be a book here. And that's kind of how this memoir was born. It was just basically putting these stories together and then making them into something that would engage the general reader versus just my mom.
Right. And in the book, there is a character whose name is Mickey, and he he's a coworker, and he tends to prompt you to kind of think about, you know, these events that happened in your life. Is Mickey a real person? Is he a combination of people? Talk about the character a little bit.
Mickey, yes, yes, on both counts. He is definitely real, and but yes, he's a combination of real people I've known in my life, kind of mentors, people I've worked with throughout my career. And I employed there a fairly common memoir technique of the composite character, mainly to protect the Mickeys that I think some of them would have enjoyed, or I think some of them know who they are in the book, but they like that. But also from the perspective for the reader versus introducing a new person for each story, it's this common thread, and the Mickey character helps me tell the story because all of those mentors throughout my life, we would have conversations about the past, about our childhood. And the Mickey that opens up the story, who I was working with in the power plant, actually did have relatives that lived in Greenpoint, so he had a lot of those Brooklyn memories that I shared. His were just 20 years before mine. And so I use him and then another of the Mickey characters as a professor, another one is an engineering colleague I worked with. All of them were a little bit of a curmudgeon, but he's a very likable character, I think.
Yeah.
Because my mom called me up and she's like, who's this Mickey guy? What's he look like? How old is he? I think she was in love with Mickey. She wanted more of Mickey. How come Mickey's not in this chapter? What happened to Mickey? You know, I'm like, Mom, he's not the main character. It's just a thread to help me weave the story. But who knows? Maybe there'll be a book of Mickey stories.
Eventually. I was just going to say, maybe Mickey needs his own book. A common thread in the book is food, and you weave it through in a variety of story in a variety of ways. One of my thoughts as I was reading was, obviously you were a kid and then a teenager, and so you had great metabolism and you were playing outside all day. Because I kept thinking, how is this man not 300 pounds? But talk about the importance of food throughout the book.
Yeah, I think that also is a theme that came up, and my wife said, is this a book about food? You guys ate a lot. And I think it was because we were outside all day. We rarely went home, and it wasn't like we were just, when I was a little bit older, we weren't just playing right outside our front door. We may have been two or three blocks away from our houses or up at the park or kind of the lots, which we were never supposed to go to. And so we always had to go find food, and we barely had any money. I mean, most of us would have a buck maybe in our pocket. And so it was the street food aspect. And back then, of course, things were cheaper, but we would go get a slice of pizza or we would go and find an egg cream or a knish. And it just depended upon where we were in the neighborhood and what store or deli or pizza place we were close to find that food. And sometimes we would find food that wasn't as common. I have a story in there where one of the guys, an Irish guy, takes us to a fish place. And in that fish place, they have smoked fish hanging up, these fish, you know, with heads and tails. Mm-hmm. And we are hungry, so we have the smoked fish. And that's just what we did. We just found food, or we would walk miles for getting a certain snack that we wanted.
Right. Yeah, it seems like there was just sort of food everywhere. I mean, the story about the pickles in the garage is foreign to me. I mean, I was like, okay, some guy has pickles in his garage, but it worked for you guys.
Yes, that's kind of what it was. And back then, we had, I remember, one supermarket, which was quite far from our house, but in Brooklyn, it's still like that to some respect, where there might be a cheese store or a butcher. Back then it was even more specific, like you mentioned, a pickle store, or there was a sausage place where you just went and got sausages. That's just how it was.
Yeah, I was fascinated by all of the food, I have to admit. You also have a follow-up memoir coming out in 2019, according to the back of this book. So can you talk a little bit about that book?
I took a break from because there's a lot to that one. The working title of that is most likely No Place Like Camp. And in the book, I connect a lot of travel stories from my time spent overseas for different projects, and I tie them back to our little piece of Northwoods, Maine. It starts out when we are searching for a camp, and we wanted a place that had electric and indoor plumbing and working windows and a bathroom with a door, pretty much the typical stuff you would have in a dwelling. Well, that's not what we ended up with. And there's a lot of places in northern Maine within our budget range that don't have electric and running water. And so it's quite a funny experience trying to find that, and then also connecting that to experiences overseas where a lot of people still don't have those things. And so it's an interesting book of funny stories. I definitely would be come back and talk to you about that next year.
Okay, that would be awesome. And when you say camp, I picture, I think, a different kind of camp, but it's more like a cabin. Am I correct?
Correct. And in Maine, everybody's going up to camp every weekend. And camps in Maine can be anything from a little shack on a shore to an elaborate 10-room house. It just depends upon a person's perspective of their camp.
Okay. And you also write fiction and are currently working on a mystery. It's called The Lobster Lake Bandits. So what can you tell us about that?
Well, there's a different story. Like you said, it's a mystery and it's a novel and it's fiction, but it's around up where we have our camp, which is a very remote place. There's very few roads still and not many people. And I set this historical fiction with some Northwoods lore and education about our Northwoods, pulling that together in a story about this family that has a camp in the area, and they get mixed up with some poachers and even the FBI, and it's some real-life mystery that pulls together into that story and highlights our area of Maine. So I had a lot of fun writing that. It's the kind of story I'd like to read while sitting on vacation at the lake or by the wood stove in the winter. So I hope other people will enjoy it too. I plan to release that probably early September, which coincides with our Maine seaplane fly-in, which happens in Greenville, Maine, and that's a centerpiece of that novel.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you obviously have written both nonfiction and fiction. How is writing a fiction book then for you different from writing nonfiction, especially in memoir form?
Well, certainly with fiction, it's all made up. And I had myself, I had no idea where that book was going until the end. And writing that first fiction book, it was like, wow, that's what happens. You get to the end, you're like, I didn't see that coming. And sometimes I would get up in the morning and start writing, and I had no idea where it was going. So that was a lot of fun, versus with the memoir, it being nonfiction, I knew the end. I knew where I wanted to start. I knew where it had to end because it had to be true. But it was the middle, connecting all of that into some story that the reader would connect to emotionally, because I think emotion is an important part of a memoir for people to connect to it. But the challenge was putting together a story around that to make it interesting. With fiction, it changed a bit, and I went back and I added pieces, but for the most part, it was a surprise, even to me. And I don't outline ever any type of writing. I think in school we're taught to sometimes outline in structure, and I think that's just a surefire way, in my opinion, to kill the creativity or where you're going to end up. So I just type and type and type. What comes out ends up on the page.
Okay. It's the rude interrupting host again. Time for our second break of the podcast. Although I do want to say that I'm always fascinated by the way authors write, and the vastly different way that they all approach it. I mean, of course, authors are going to write in different ways, and there's going to be as many different ways to write as there are authors. I am just fascinated to see how their processes work, you know, if they're really structured, if they're less structured, if they're a combination of less structured and really structured. I find that fascinating. Maybe I'm kind of a book nerd, but I'm okay with that. So let's go ahead and take our second break of the podcast. When we come back, we'll be concluding the interview with Tommy Carbone, and more stories, more talk about his books and what he's working on, et cetera, et cetera. So stay tuned. You're listening to the GSMC Book Review Podcast, and I'll be right back.
Tired of searching the vast jungle of podcasts? Now listen close and hear this out. There's a podcast network that covers just about everything that you've been searching.
Hey!
The Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network is here. Nothing less than a podcast bliss with endless hours of podcast coverage.
from news, sports, music, fashion, cooking, entertainment, fantasy, football, and so much more. So stop lurking around and go straight out to the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network, guaranteed to fill that podcast itch, whatever it may be. Visit us at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and download us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Google Play.
Welcome back to the GSMC Book Review Podcast. Let's go ahead and get right back to that interview with author Tobby Carbone. And this book, The Lobster Lake Bandits, is the first in a series. So do you have any idea of how many books you would like in that series, or do you just want to see where it goes?
Well, I definitely have the second one that's complete through the first draft. So I plan to release that at least maybe 6 to 9 months after the first one. And then I have the makings of a third book. So there's definitely going to be three in the Lobster Lake series after that. I don't know. It depends upon how it's received. I can kind of see there's a prequel to the Parker family there that could be made, but we'll see how it goes.
Okay. And it takes place in 1988. Is that correct? Am I remembering that right?
Yes. With flashbacks to the 1950s.
Okay, so talk about your decision to set it in that particular time period.
As I mentioned, the kind of the glue that pulled that together was the seaplane fly-in that happens in Greenville, Maine. And based upon the story of Joe Parker that has to do with the seaplane fly-in and one of the anniversary years, that's what started where I started the timeline, and then I just built forward and backwards from there.
Okay, thank you. So you're trained as an engineer, which makes me think of a lot of math. What made you then decide that you wanted to start writing?
Camp. It had to do with camp. Camp is a place where we go to relax. We have no TV. There's no internet. There's very few distractions. And I started reading a lot of Maine authors who have Maine themes that had engaging stories, people like Bill Rohrbach and John Ford and Randy Spencer. And I said to myself, well, I have some stories. I can write these down. And since we still have no internet or TV, I read a little less and I write a lot when I'm there. And I've always heard people say, write stories for yourself. So that's what I do. I write stories that I think I would like to read and put them down on paper and try to connect these stories and people and characters together into a story.
Okay. So then you said you've always heard write what you want to read. Do you have advice for aspiring authors?
If you want to write, it's just a matter of writing. Spend some time every day writing or typing. Don't overspend time at a workshop or talking about how to write or reading how-to books. Just write and then write more. And after your writing is done, or you think your writing is done, then it's about editing. And editing is just excruciating painful. You have to edit a lot. And when I was editing the first book, I thought back to my shop teacher in high school when I was building a TV stand for my Uncle Ray. Uncle Ray is mentioned in Growing Up Greenpoint, and he was definitely a character. He had the largest TV in the whole family back then in the 80s. It was probably 26 inches, but it was huge because of the CRT screen.
Right.
So this TV stand I had to make him was huge, and my teacher made me sand it and sand it and sand it for 8 to 10 weeks, and I just wanted to stain it. And the staining only took a couple of hours, and he told me, see, if you had stained that first, it wouldn't have looked so good. And that's kind of writing. It's about writing and editing. Publication and publishing these days, if you're an independent author, only takes a couple of minutes. You upload your files and you push publish, and you're pretty much published. But if you want to have something useful, you have to do a lot of writing and editing.
Okay. Thank you. When you do take the time to read instead of write, who are some of your favorite authors, and what genres do you like to read?
That's changed a lot over the past few years. I think as my engineering background, a lot of my writing was nonfiction and business books, and maybe 20% was autobiographies and classical fiction. Over the past 4 or 5 years, it's kind of gone the other way, and I read a lot of memoirs, particularly adventure memoirs. A book that kind of started all this would have been Temple Stream by Bill Rawback, who's also a New Yorker that's now a MENA, and I enjoyed how he put together his stories of day-to-day stuff, whether it was taking a snowshoe walk or getting his firewood delivered, into a story. And it's quite funny. And I'm no Bill Bryson, but I like to write entertaining stories and give people that funny aspect of life. I don't really enjoy a lot of the memoirs that are pain or suffering. I think people have a niche when they write those, but I prefer the funny ones or something that's more adventurous. So I like Anthony Doerr's Four Seasons in Rome comes to mind. It's some place where somebody goes and they experience life from a different perspective.
Okay. Thank you. I was thinking back to your memoir, which we started talking about at the beginning of this episode. And I mentioned in one of our emails before that this was, we're of sort of similar age. You're about the same age as my sister. But we had very, very, very different childhoods because I grew up in rural Montana. You grew up in Brooklyn. Is there a story that you can think of that just kind of, for you, epitomizes that growing up in Greenpoint? For someone who didn't grow up there, is there a story that kind of encapsulates your experience, or is that too big of a question?
No, I think probably the story about roller skating. Back in Greenpoint, we played street games, but we also, that was a big craze of roller skating and disco roller skating. So there were these disco roller skating rinks, and we would roller skate to the disco roller rink, which was up on the avenue. And there, you know, people would meet up as we were roller skating to get to the place. Everybody would be, hey, look who's coming. And you know, you're roller skating down the middle of an avenue, holding up traffic. And that is, for me, the epitome of what it was like, because the roller skating time would start at 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and everybody was kind of like a commuter train of roller skaters to get there on time to meet up with the girls and have fun playing pinball and roller skating and eating French fries. And that was basically what we did. Mm-hmm. We just hung out together.
Yeah. And it was, I mean, you're in the middle of a huge city, but it was really almost like growing up in a small town in some ways, it felt like.
Exactly. And when I put the map of Brooklyn in the book, in the beginning of the book, there's a map of Brooklyn, and Brooklyn is huge. And Greenpoint's this little area at the top north corner of Brooklyn along the East River and the Newtown Creek. And my daughter said, "Is that small?" Yeah, it did. It did feel small back
right.
then, because family was so close and there were so many relatives nearby and so many friends.
Yeah. Well, I have to admit that I was one of those people that you talk about in the book who didn't realize that there were different neighborhoods. I mean, I guess it makes sense when you say it. I was proud that I knew there were different boroughs, but it does make sense that there would be different neighborhoods within those boroughs. I just never thought about it. So it was really interesting to read about a specific segment of Brooklyn. So where can people find you on the internet? Do you have a website? Do you have social media?
Oh, absolutely. And I tell you that the first place to try or go to is the Amazon author page. So when you go on Amazon, you click on my name as the author. That will bring you to my bio and a video about the book and links to my books. But there's also a link to my blog. So my blog posts are there. But when you go to one of the posts, you'll get to my website, which then links to my Facebook page. So you can find that also at Tommy Carbone Author. I'm on Twitter at TommyCarbone212, and the 212 has significant meaning. That wasn't only our area code for our phone back then, but that was also my street number. And I didn't realize until I actually made that Twitter handle. I'm like, wow, I lived at 212 North Henry Street. So that's a little bit of a backstory about the book. I'm on Goodreads. And then for those that like memoirs, I would suggest people join the Facebook group, We Love Memoirs. And in that group, we have readers and authors that interact about different books, and it's a fun place to post and engage.
Thank you. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you would like for people to know about your books or writing in general? Anything that we haven't covered?
I think the biggest thing is I like to hear from readers. Mm-hmm. The book's only been out for a month or so, and so many readers have emailed me or instant messaged me about how they love the book and how it brought back memories for them, or they're buying copies for other people they know. And I love hearing these comments. So I think engaging with authors is important, and giving people feedback. And if you've read the book, please, please, please leave a review on Amazon or Goodreads or Barnes & Noble, because people buy the books based on covers and reviews. And if we don't have reviews up there, people can't find the book, because publishing these days is a bit like finding a four-leaf clover in a huge field of three-leaf clovers. Unless someone sees it and points it out, nobody can find it.
Mm-hmm. And this is back to the book. I said that it was very, you know, very different from my own growing up. And yet, when you said that people have commented that it brought back memories, even though we had vastly different childhoods, there were still similarities. My grandmother's Norwegian, which is different, again, from your grandparents, but all of my memories about my grandmother revolve around food. As you were talking about your grandparents and Sunday dinners and those types of things, I kept thinking back to my grandmother. And to a certain extent, my dad's parents, who were German and had very odd food tastes, but food was, you know, very important in growing up. And when my grandmother died, the pastor asked us to tell stories about her, and like 90% of them involved food. So I couldn't, you know, personally relate to some of the stuff, but I could definitely relate to family and food.
Sure. Yeah.
So I would like to thank you so much for taking time out of your weekend to talk to me about your books. I really appreciate that.
I certainly appreciate being here, and thank you for having me and running this interview. I really like the TMSC podcast. It's great.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that. And so the book, again, is Growing Up Greenpoint. It is out now. I didn't ask. People can find it on Amazon, obviously. Where else can they find the book?
It's also on Barnes & Noble.
Okay. So Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and you've got other books coming out, and hopefully you'll come back and talk about those when they're out.
That would be great. Thank you so much.
I want to say thank you once again to my guest, author Tommy Carbone, for joining me to talk about his first memoir, Growing Up Greenpoint, A Kid's Life in 1970s Brooklyn, as well as his forthcoming books. If you are intrigued by the stories that Tommy told and want to know more about his life growing up in Brooklyn in the 70s, then this is your opportunity to enter to win a signed copy. Of this book, Growing Up Greenpoint. All you have to do is go to our social media, Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. Those links are in the show description. Go to one of those social media pages and comment on episode 94, this interview. That's it. Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, comment on the post that has episode 94, and you will automatically be entered to win a copy of Growing Up Greenpoint. So you'll have opportunities to enter. The giveaway will be open until, let's see, July 13th, and then winners will be announced on July 15th. So you have plenty of opportunity to listen to this interview, know about the book, go to the social media pages, and enter the contest. At any rate, thank you so much for joining me for this episode of the GSMC Book Review Podcast. Join me again on Thursday for more talk of books and books. I hope you have a wonderful, happy, and safe 4th of July. Please, please wear sunscreen. Please drink responsibly if you're doing that. And please be considerate of your neighbors. If you are someone that likes to do fireworks, please be considerate and safe. And we should all have a lovely and happy holiday. Thank you again for joining me. Join me again on Thursday. Enter to win a copy of Growing Up Greenpoint. But in the meantime, I know you've got a lot to do. You've got contests to enter. You've got 4th of July to celebrate. But take some time to get lost in a good book. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Book Review Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. From movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.